I am Larry Jacobs, editor of Traders World Magazine. In today's volatile markets, especially the ones we've seen in the last few days, requires the ability to master your fears in the face of uncertainty. Eric Keeve has just written a new excellent book about the subject, and I will be interviewing him regarding that subject. The title of his book is Mastering Trading Stress. Again, Eric Keeve, go introduce yourself, Eric, and tell them how you can be reached.
Yeah, my name is Ari Keeve, and it's Ari Keeve, spelled ARIKIEV.com. I have a website, and any questions that we don't cover here, I'll be happy to answer questions on the website. ArieKeeve.com.
Okay, again, we're here to talk about his new book. So feel free to type in questions at any time during the session at the bottom of the page, and Ari will answer that at the end of the session. So let's start in the interview. Ari, could you explain what is a trader's stress and why is it a problem?
Well, I think the nature of stress is, you know, part of the human condition. And in trading is a kind of activity where you're dealing with a tremendous amount of uncertainty, you're dealing with unpredictable events, you're dealing with insufficient information, and you're dealing with the volatility of the markets, the ups and downs, the possibility of losing a lot of money, and that sort of thing. And so it creates a tremendous amount of stress for people who are engaged in this activity. And over time, the people that are successful at it learn how to master stress. They learn a variety of techniques for getting comfortable with stress, for reducing stress, for functioning independently of the stress. They learn how to recognize it and so that it doesn't interfere so much with their decision-making, doesn't interfere so much with their performance. I think it's important to understand how stress can throw you off, how the experience of panic, confusion, fear in the early stages, paralysis in later stages, despair and depression and things of that sort, how all these things can impinge on your performance. So it becomes critical to recognize it and to be able to act independently of it.
I think we've all been there, all of us traders, so we know what you're talking about. What are the stages of stress?
Well, I think the stages of stress are initially the person may feel some anxiety, some depression, some shock, some confusion. They may feel locked in this stage and unable to decide. At a later stage, they may, particularly if somebody has a major drawdown, is losing a lot of money, they may begin to have memory loss, hypervigilance, where they're always on alert. They're constantly checking and rechecking their environment. They're unable to concentrate. They feel emotionally numb. They have a tendency to deny the reality of the events in front of them. They may feel empty, vulnerable. They may even feel depersonalized. Again, it depends on how severe the loss is, how difficult the market is, the kind of panic that may be going on in the market. At a later stage, the individual may begin to have intrusive or obsessive thoughts about the market, unable to sleep. In the last several months, I've talked to any number of people who complained about staying up at night and replaying their trades over and over again, what they should have done, fear, doubt, shame, suspicion, tendency to avoid getting involved. And then later on in the final stages, that this is rare, but this is part of the natural history of stress. Individual may be feeling hopeless and helpless and may become very depressed and in need of medication or in need of getting out of the markets and taking time off for rehabilitation.
I've been at certain phases of fear also, like thing that I will replay at the end of the day is I knew what to do, but I didn't do it. Do you find that a lot in traders?
Very common, very common. And I would say this. I would say that it's probably not a bad idea to review what happened during the day at the end of each day, to keep a diary not only of the trade, but of the charts, and a diary of what you were experiencing, so you can begin to separate the way you're feeling from what actually has happened and can begin to get some objectivity about the nature of the trade and not allow, when you're under stress, you begin to interpret events in a more catastrophic way and tend to overreact to your own responses, and that becomes somewhat of a self-fulfilling prophecy and a self-cycling one, which then leads to even more symptomatology. So it becomes critical to learn to detach, to objectify, to recognize that you're going through this, not to be alarmed, and to separate your own reactions from what is going on in the marketplace so that you're not being thrown by what is happening. This takes some practice. And I recommend to people, and I recommend this in the book, Mastering Creating Stress, the importance of, I work with people who spend every 30 minutes, 40 minutes every day meditating, visualizing, preparing for the day, reviewing different scenarios and planning different courses of action depending on what is likely to happen, so that they're better prepared for dealing with events when they're in the middle of the events. So preparation becomes one of the best ways for arming yourself to handle stress. You have to plan the fire drill in advance and know what you're going to do. And you also have to get good and skillful at getting into that centered state of mind where you're relaxed, where you can see the data, where you're not catastrophizing about it and allowing your own panic to throw you into a tizzy.
Can you explain some of the dangers of trading under stress?
Well, certainly. I mean, somebody that's highly stressed and overreacting may be paralyzed and unable to get out of positions that aren't working, and then start rationalizing it I really believe in this, the market's wrong, I'm sure it's going to go back up, and they ride out big losses and then find themselves in a big hole. So paralysis is one of the dangers that you may not be able to react sufficiently rapidly to reduce the risk that you're in or the risk that you're taking so that you can prevent a major drawdown. For some other people, they may decide to chase after a stock, buy more as it goes down, rather than, reevaluate it and decide, maybe the market's telling me something, maybe it's time to get out, and I'll wait until it bottoms and turns before I get back in. The cool, calm, and collected trader who's got resources to assess the positions he's in, to understand the companies, to put an analyst on the case, whatever, may be in a important thing is one, recognizing when you're holding on out of fear, recognize when you're acting impulsively and getting in and chasing after a stock even as it's going down, or chasing after it as it's going up because you're trying to get back what you lost. So any of these kinds of emotional responses to managing your portfolio, which are accentuated by stress, may actually interfere with your performance.
Okay, Ari, in your book you talk about psychological energy and maintaining that. Can you explain that?
Well, what I mean by that is I've seen this in Olympic athletes. I've seen this in successful portfolio managers. I mentioned a man I know who practices yoga for 45 minutes every morning and gets himself into a calm, centered state. He is able, as the day goes on, whenever things get stressful, to take 5 minutes off to get back into that contemplative, meditative state where his pulse is slowed down, where his breathing is relaxed, where he's feeling serene, and he's able to examine the data without putting an exaggerated interpretation on it, without beginning to feel panicky about it. And this becomes a way of retaining energy, staying focused, of examining the data for what it's worth rather than looking at it in an emotional way and reacting with the feeling that, oh, my God, I'm getting killed, I'm no good, why did I ever do this, and all the kinds of things you see, the chest beating, the depression, self-rejection, all the negative things that people tend to do when things aren't going well. So the critical thing is to maintain a kind of calmness in the midst of chaos, in the midst of change, in the midst of the panic that may be surrounding you, that you're reading about on the news, or in the newspapers, or hearing on television, or picking up on Kramer or whatever. You've got to, you know, be able to stay calm, not let your own emotional responses color the way in which you trade.
Okay, can you explain the consequences of the negative emotions?
Well, I mean, the consequences of the negative emotions are you are gripped by fear and are afraid to take action, or you're gripped by greed and you're overreacting, you're taking too much risk, you're getting into positions because somebody is, or getting into stocks because you've heard tips, you become much more suggestible, you're trying to get back what you lost, you're trying to make the killing, you're trying to hit home runs, you're so anxious to make a profit that you get out of your winning trades too fast and miss even more upside. You're worrying so much you can't really assess all the risk factors associated with a stock. You can't do the research or the reading or the analysis of the companies that you're investing in. You're getting angry and reacting to someone that's putting on your trades or reacting to the broker that you're dealing with. You begin to feel paranoid, or even in a very positive sense, you've done well, you become euphoric, and you think you can do no wrong, and you stop following the strategy, the studying, the care that you may have taken to really understand the companies that you're investing in. You're a little bit more vulnerable to tips and to rumors and every possible change in sentiment or in news that might be moving stocks.
A lot of traders would think that it would be good to avoid negative feelings, but in the book you recommend that traders not avoid negative feelings. Could you explain that?
Yeah, what I mean by that is that I mean, we've been talking about how negative feelings and the response to stress is problematic, and that you need really need to master it. But if you read the book in great detail, you begin to see that part of mastering it is acknowledging it, is recognizing what you're feeling, is being able to separate the events, the movement in stocks or commodities or currencies, whatever it is you're trading, from your reaction, and then separate your reaction, the adrenaline response where your heart's going faster or you're short of breath or you feel dizzy or faint or numb or you have palpitations or you feel butterflies or diarrhea or urinary urgency or confusing thoughts or any of those symptoms, where you separate the event from those symptoms, and then you separate your own interpretation of the symptoms and the interpretation of the market from the events or the stimuli and from the reaction, and then you make a rational judgment about what's the most appropriate thing to be doing in terms of what your investment strategy is. You recognize the value of having a goal, the value of having a strategy, the value of figuring out how big you have to be in particular positions, how much work you have to do to build conviction in the ideas so that you can have a plan of action which will hopefully get you closer to what your specific financial targets are. And then with that kind of a blueprint, you're able to deal with stress in a more objective way. The important thing is recognizing that the stress is happening, not recognizing it, recognizing how it relates to the way you interpret events, recognizing it as in terms of how it influences your decisions, where you're getting too impulsive, or you're getting paralyzed, where you're holding on to losers too long, you're not holding your winners long enough, and the more you can recognize it, as opposed to deny it, as opposed to tough it out, stress is just part of the human condition, and the best way of dealing with it is recognizing that you're feeling this way, being able to talk about it, and learn to ride it out. I mean, I've often suggested to people who are experiencing panic and anxiety to start their stopwatch as soon as they start having some of those symptoms, as soon as they start worrying and getting anxious, and time the duration of those symptoms, because they oftentimes find those symptoms of anxiety and panic and stress maybe last 6-7 hours, but then they dissipate. And so the next time they begin to experience that same stress response, they can say to themselves, well, the last time it lasted 6 hours, I know I'm in for 6 hours of misery, but I know that there's an end to it. Well, to the extent that you put a frame around it in terms of time, you soon discover the next time it doesn't last 6 hours, it only lasts 4 hours. And the next time, it only lasts 2 hours. And eventually, when you really get good, particularly when you've really learned to practice relaxation and meditation and visualization, you can experience stress, and it may only last a minute or two because you've gotten comfortable with the feeling and you're not reacting to the reaction itself. It's what FDR said, is the only thing we have to fear is fear itself. So one of the ways of dealing with stress is to kind of accept it, to go with it, to ride with it, to allow yourself to feel it until you get comfortable with it and you have a better understanding of how long it lasts, what effects it has, how it impinges on your judgment and your decision-making, and how it interferes with the goal-oriented trading process that ideally you've set up so that you have some blueprint for managing your trading in a highly volatile, fluctuating, uncertain, unpredictable marketplace.
Okay. In your book, you mention winning personality. Can you explain that, and how could one make the most of his winning personality?
Well, I think the winning personality, you find that people who are good at this, well, people that are good at athletics tend to be very focused, tend to spend a lot of time preparing, spend a lot of time practicing, spend a lot of time reviewing what they're going to do under various scenarios, plan to have a solution for how they're going to deal with a whole variety of circumstances. And so it's not by chance that they're successful. They have a plan, and they work the plan, and they keep improving it, and they keep reviewing what's happened, what's worked, what hasn't worked. When I work with traders, I go over with them what worked last year, what worked last month, what worked last week, what didn't work, what ideas did you have that you really did the work, really understood the companies, and really were able to get an edge, a variant perception, something that you know, that you knew that other people didn't know, something that gave you the confidence to build a big position because you had a lot of conviction. Where did you lose money? Very frequently it would be where they listened to a friend, they relied on somebody else's recommendation, but never got the follow-through, never did the work, and never understood all the details that they really needed to know in order to be successful. So people who are winners figure out what it is they're good at, what it is they need to do, what it is they need to supplement by, you know, building a team of colleagues that they work with or exchange ideas with, people who are buddies who can be supportive of them when they're going through tough patches, figuring out what their strengths are, what their weaknesses are, and then trying to build a strategy around their strengths, and then trying to supplement it by building as much of a support structure around them that will help them to do what they have to do.
We all know that there are some traders that are afraid to win, and sometimes we wonder if we are one of those. How do we know if we're one of those that we're afraid to win?
I think it's probably fair to say that more people are there than not. If you playing to win, and that was the title of my first book called Trading to Win, and I made reference to a lot of experiences I had working with Olympic athletes who were, you know, dedicated their lives to getting on the Olympic team or to winning a gold medal. And the majority of people are reluctant to commit to winning because they're afraid that they're not going to win. And so instead of making the commitment and then doing what it takes in order to win, they find reasons not to go full bore at something, not to do the studying that's required, not to do the kind of work, not to give up certain kinds of activities which are time-consuming and enervating and distracting. They're not willing to focus, concentrate, and do what it takes for fear that they may do all that and still not succeed. The secret is that the people who succeed recognize, the people who are winners recognize that you probably only win 50 to 60% of the time. 40 to 50% of the time, you lose. And then amongst the instances where you win, you only win big in a very small percentage of cases. So the people who are most experienced at winning are really people who've learned how to lose. Not that they're trying to lose, they understand that losing is part of it and that you have to use the losing experience as a learning opportunity. What can I learn from the failed experiment, as Edison pointed out, where it took him 10,000 experiments to develop the electric light bulb or to perfect it. So the winner is the person that's willing to put the effort in and is willing to be guided by the desire to be fully engaged. So it's not about the result. You commit to the end result, and you use that as a frame of reference for the kind of activity that you have to engage in order to produce the result. So the result is really a beacon light or a motivator or a guideline to give you an idea of what you need to do in order to be able to produce that result. Without the goal, without the target, there's a tendency to go off in a lot of different directions and never to accomplish what it is you've set out to do or to accomplish anything as concretely as you can when you have a target. But to play, you know, it's kind of like people that have won the Super Bowl have won it because they decided to win it. Now, not everybody that decides to win it wins it, but nobody wins it without having made the decision to win it. You have to be willing to set up a high-stake objective and then do what it takes to make that happen, which means a lot of work, a lot of commitment, taking responsibility, being accountable, and maybe becoming more reality-oriented in recognizing, you know, how tough the business is. I mean, I've worked with any number of, you know, professional traders who handle, you know, large sums of money. And so somebody, you know, who's working in a hedge fund who's got a fair amount of money to invest may with all the background he has and all the support he has, may recognize that in the course of the year, if he has 6 or 7 good ideas, that's a lot. So he may spend a tremendous amount of time digging in, getting ideas from the paper, from television, from reading 10Qs or 10Ks, from checking things out on the internet, from talking to people, from doing a lot of work, and he may recognize that he can only look at a limited number of companies and that he's best off developing some knowledge, some expertise, so that he's trading he's trading with a knowledge base. And this is tough stuff. It's not easy to do.
We all know that as a trader, stress is really bad for trading. Do you have any ways you recommend to reduce stress?
Well, I think I mentioned this earlier, and let me mention my website again. If anybody has questions beyond what we're talking about, they can, you know, send me a note. I'd be happy to respond at arikeev.com, and that's spelled A-R-I-A-I-E-V, like the city in Ukraine, arikeev.com. Anyhow, I would say that it's best not to wait till you're feeling stressed to start practicing some kind of meditation, some kind of visualization or relaxation exercise, prayer, exercise, the right kind of diet. Probably, if you're in the course of a week trading, it's probably not a good idea to not get enough sleep or to be drinking alcohol or to be doing a whole bunch of things that we do which take us out of our game. So the more physically fit you are and the more focused you are on achieving some kind of concrete result, the more likely you are to do it. In the end of the day, or at the end of the day, the results you get are really going to be a reflection of who you are, how willing you are to commit to the result, how much you think about it, how focused you become on it, how focused you are on the objective, how much time you spend working on it. Now, some people may say, well, I don't have the time, or I really don't have the inclination. Well, you know, I would say maybe this isn't the activity to be involved in. This is not the lottery. This is something where a lot of work and a lot of understanding and a lot of courses and a lot of reading and a lot of lectures and seminars like this one we're having right now, all these things will contribute to trying to improve the quality of your game so that you have some control over your results and some control over your destiny. So meditation, visualization, exercise, those are very critical things. I think keeping a diary of what you experience, of having a trading buddy or a support group of people that can empathize with what you're going through, that may be going through that themselves, who can support you, can help give you some sense of how they've handled it. All that's of value. It may very well be that some of the critical people in your lives don't recognize the importance of what you're doing or the value of it, or may be naysayers or doubtful or skeptical or negative, and that may be an additional source of pressure on you. So those are the kinds of things people have to look into by way of trying to get that clear mind and clear thought process so they can, you know, invest, can recognize that 50 to 60% of the time, well, say 50% of the time, they're not going to be right, and that when they are right, they've got to be able to recognize when they're really right and be able to get bigger in those positions, because at the end of the day, most of the profit for most traders, professional as well as non-professional, comes from a very small percentage of their trades. So it's being in the right trade and then being able to play it correctly and not get out too soon because you're too excited, you're too euphoric, you're too stressed, you're too anxious, you're worried, and so forth. It also means that you've got to look carefully at how many positions you're in where you really don't know enough about it, and you're being pushed up and down because of a lot of market volatility, because the fact is that are not only beyond your control, but you don't fully understand, and you're probably better off not being in those kinds of situations. You don't want to be just hoping that something's going to work. You want to have a real rationale for why it's going to work. You want to have a path to getting paid. You want to have a thesis. That is, you want to know why something is going to go from 20 to 30 over the next 6 months. You want to understand the new product cycles that are coming out, whether it's new video games or it's an Apple device or iPhone or whatever it is you're looking at. You want to have some understanding of what the competitive landscape is, what the margins look like, what the balance sheet looks like, what the profit and loss of the company looks like, what the company is saying to the public at conferences and so on, so that you've got some understanding of why it's going to go from 20 to 30, what the path to getting paid is, what are the catalysts, what are the events that are going to unlock the value. And the more you can kind of identify that and then follow that, the better handle you're going to have on generating profits from your investments.
Okay, just a reminder for everybody listening out there, feel free, again, to type questions in at the bottom of the page that we can answer at the end of the session. Ari, what is your comment in the book, Failing to Commit?
Well, I think I've just been talking about commitment. I think to succeed at this, probably to succeed at most things, you've got to really commit to the result. You've got to really believe in the outcome. You've got to then do what it takes to realize that outcome, and you've got to be motivated and fired up by the results, and then be willing to make the effort and make the modifications and adjustments as you go along in order to be able to achieve the result. Not that you're necessarily going to achieve the result, but you've got to be able to commit, to promise to produce that result. And to the extent that you've got someone in your life or a group of people, an investment club, for example, where other people are also committed to the same objective, you have a better chance of staying true to your promise and living out of a vision of producing a specific result without any certainty that you're going to be able to do it. Commitment is really deciding we're going to put a man on the moon, or we're going to realize some objective that doesn't look possible, and then trying to figure out what is necessary to do in order to make that happen. It's really a decision to move towards a particular end result without any guarantee, and then doing what it takes, doing the work, doing the study, doing the self-examination, the review of game films, and so on, in order to be able to get you to the outcome. More people than not don't see the power in commitment, but I think it's a very vital and critical principle for producing outperformance or ordinary results. It's the doggedness, the perseverance, the willingness to stay focused and to concentrate on the target, and the satisfaction comes from the full engagement in that process.
Sort of like Thomas Edison.
Yeah.
In your book, and I'm one of these two, you comment the reluctance to short stocks. I don't have any problems with commodity shorting, but I do have a problem with shorting stocks. What did you mean by that?
Well, people are reluctant to short stocks because, for a number of reasons, the possibility that, you know, if you buy a stock and it goes down, there's a defined amount of loss. You buy a stock at 20 and it goes to zero, you can lose $20. You short a stock at 20, it can theoretically go as high, it can go to unlimited heights, so that or infinite heights. So the possibility of losing a tremendous amount of money, the possibility of having to sell the stock because the person you borrowed it from calls the stock, you know, so forcing you to buy it at a time when it's gone up so high and you lose a tremendous amount of money. It also, reluctance to short is it also occurs because people find it so difficult to really understand why stocks are going to go down. It takes two or three times as much work to understand why a company is going to fail. And many times a stock that looks like it's going to fail becomes a buyout candidate or a candidate for a leveraged buyout, and that pops the stock up. So it's very difficult to predict that kind of negative direction for a stock. It's also based on the observation that the market tends to be moving up rather than down, and so there's a kind of an upward moving bias in the stock market in general. So people have a great difficulty with shorts. So even in hedge funds, which are theoretically able to both go long and short and therefore take out the market risk, the vast majority of them make their money on the long side, not so much on the short side.
All of us traders do have stress, and you have a chapter in there in the book about stress busters. Can you explain what those are? And
stress busters have to do with what I was talking about before, some of the techniques for reducing stress. I think besides meditation and visualization, one of the best things to do is, and I saw a videotape once of Jerry Spence talking about picking a jury and starting off the jury selection by telling them how anxious he felt because he was defending a particular individual, and whether she would live or die depended on the jury, and he was very unsure. And he talked about his own anxiety and trepidation and so on. And the more he talked about it, the more comfortable he became. And it was a very dramatic demonstration of the value of acknowledging your vulnerability, of acknowledging your discomfort, of acknowledging that you're unsure of how you're going to be received, you're unsure of whether you're going to be accepted or not, you don't have control of that, and you're somewhat intimidated. And the more somebody does that sort of thing, and this holds for people who are public speakers who find, or for the fact that public speaking is such a source of anxiety for most people, that in workshops that I've done, I've invited somebody who was very afraid of talking to stand up and start talking about how afraid they were. And oftentimes they hesitated, and then they began to talk, and after a while they got so comfortable talking about being uncomfortable that they were comfortable. So one of the best ways of reducing stress is to acknowledge it, to admit that you're feeling trepidation and uncertainty and blurred vision and dizziness and so forth, and gradually you get comfortable expressing, experiencing your humanity. We saw this the other day in New Hampshire when Hillary Clinton appeared to get very misty-eyed and vulnerable, and it was a very powerful moment in terms of, I believe, how the voters received her. And she became much more authentic in admitting to her her feelings of vulnerability and uncertainty. And I think that's one of the best busters there are, because perfection is really not where we need to be. We need to be able to admit to our vulnerability and admit to our uncertainty, admit we don't have perfect information, admit that we're worried, and as we do that, it gradually dissipates.
Towards the end of your book, you have, of course, the final thing that none of us want to do is, what do you do when you have a breakdown?
Well, I think, you know, breakdown has a lot of different meanings, but, I mean, if you find that you're really not functioning, or that your strategy has fallen apart, another way of looking at it, that no matter what you do, you can't seem to get it right, I think it's probably a good idea. Let's say the breakdown takes the form of a big drawdown. You've lost a lot of money. You are running the risk of going out of business or of not having enough money to come back. You really want to, at that time, pare down, reduce your risk, get smaller. If you can, stay just in your very high conviction ideas. Or if not, just get out and take a little bit of time off and start over. If you're trading, you really want to see it as a long-term opportunity, and you don't have to succeed today, but you want to survive today so that you can come back tomorrow. So the critical thing in dealing with breakdowns is to acknowledge them and to retool.
Okay. We have some questions coming in here now, so let's... I'll give you some of those, Ari.
Go ahead.
David from Toronto says, I find that most difficult aspect of day trading E-minis is keeping 100% concentration when your mind wonders the opportunity arrived is gone. How do you force yourself to stay fully focused at all times?
Well, I think that it's not about forcing yourself. It may very well be that David is talking about anxiety, worrying, and so forth. And it may be a good idea when you find that you're not able to concentrate that you may be taking too much risk. You may be worrying about the results, and you may, like virtue of worrying, being stressed, not able to concentrate. What you need to do is reduce the amount of risk that you're taking so that you're only taking that amount of risk which you're comfortable with, so as to reduce the levels of anxiety until such a time as you're able to manage it, and then you can slowly titrate up the amount of risk that you take. You might also keep track of how long you can concentrate and how much that's related to the amount that you're trading, and kind of keep a tab on that so you can begin to see that the amount you're trading, the greater it is, the shorter the time span is that you can concentrate. So you want to reduce the amount you're trading so as to increase your ability to stay focused. You want to find that sweet spot. Stop worrying about the result. Lower the targets until the amount you're trying to obtain is attainable, and then only slowly begin to build up.
Okay. Malcolm in Bethesda says, I have experience with a variety of meditation and relaxation techniques and find them to be extremely helpful. Do you have specific recommendations on particular types of meditation, use of biofeedback, trading, or other approaches?
I would say that's an excellent question. I would say that there are just so many different techniques. You've got to try a few of them and find the ones that work for you. There's no one technique fits all. Some people like to meditate. Some people like to run. Some people like biofeedback. Whatever works for you is the one to choose. As long as you find that you can get yourself into that centered state of mind, I think you're going to be best off.
Okay, David in Toronto says, can you describe in detail how does one go about visualization?
Well, I talk about it in the book. I mean, visualization is where you literally can see a particular set of procedures in your mind's eye and can go over it until it actually seems as if you're doing it. I've used visualization, for example, with some Olympic figure skaters who were having some difficulty doing triple turns in the air on the ice. And I would get them to walk me through the steps of the jump and the turn in their mind's eye, so I could hear what it is they were seeing, and they could articulate what it is they would be doing. So I'm jumping up, I'm spinning around once, I'm spinning around twice. Someone would say at that point, I can't do it anymore. This is making me uncomfortable. I'd have to encourage them to keep doing it so that, you know, okay, let's do it again. You go around once, you go around twice, just keep going, take a deep breath. And eventually, when they could see themselves in their mind's eye spinning around three times and feel comfortable doing it just in conversation, they could then get out on the ice and do it on the ice. I've done the same thing with bobsledders, and I've done the same thing with traders. Practice getting into this relaxed state of mind. Imagine yourself at the beach. Imagine yourself sitting there with the roaring waves. You can hear the birds. You can see a bird fly by. You can see a bird fly by with a balloon. You can take some negative thoughts you have and put it in the balloon. You can see the bird let go of the balloon as the balloon with your negative thoughts flies away. So that's a kind of a visual image, and you can do all kinds of things with that until you can take negative thoughts and put it in there. You can have the bird come back with a balloon, emptying out positive thoughts, good feelings, and you can practice that until you get very strong imagining what it is you want to imagine and then translating that into your trading day.
Okay, Ken in Los Angeles says, what is the maximum percent-wise of one's account one should risk in any given stock or market?
That's going to vary from firm to firm or from individual to individual. When I work with professional traders, say somebody that's running $10 million, $20 million, $50 million, $100 million, the general rule that I recommend is that somebody not put any more than 10% of his money into any one position. I also would recommend that the individual not put any more than 30% net long or net short with his portfolio, so that if the individual is running $100 million, I would want him ideally to be $50 million short, $50 million long, or $80 million long, $20 million short, or $70 million long, $30 million short, something like that. So there's kind of a balance.
Okay. Scott in Houston says, I have a goal to make, say, 6 points per day in the S&P. Often I'll reach 6 points early in the day. I have a problem quitting at that point, and I stay in the market hoping to make more. Often I will give up my profits by continuing to trade instead of producing additional points. Any ideas on how to break this bad habit?
Yeah, it's an interesting, a very interesting point, a very common problem. I think my view is you've got to decide what your number is. If it's 6 points, then that's what it's got to be. It may be that 6 points isn't challenging enough. You may want to raise it to 8 points or 9 points. You're going to have to find let me put it another way. If you reach your target in a day or in a week or in a month sooner than you expected, then at that point, instead of just staying in the same trade, you want to reassess and start over. So maybe at that point you want to say, okay, I've already reached the 6 points. Now let me start from zero and figure out where I can make another 6 points. It may be in another trade. It may not be the same trade. You may already have exhausted that first trade. So at that point, you may be feeling confident. You've got to do a reassessment of your strategy, whether it's the S&P or it's a stock and so forth. You can't allow the over-exuberance to lead you to stay in a position and then round-trip it. So that's a common problem. You want to decide, if you're able to reach that goal earlier, you want to set a new goal and then figure out how you reach the new goal. But it's not going to be because that trade is going to continue, because that's not what you plan for, and unless you've done the work to justify that, there's no justification for staying in it.
A question from Jeff Keswick. Hi, and thank you. How do you keep yourself from becoming cocky after you've made a few good trades and end up giving it all back and more? I think you just
almost a variation of the last question. I think you just have to recognize that that's what happens, and that euphoria, which I talk about in the book, which manifests itself as cockiness, can lead you to do stupid things, to not follow your strategy and not, you know, recognize that you really need to do more work in order to stay in the game. I think it's recognizing that. That's likely to be a recurrent pattern until you learn how to kind of handle it. So you need to correct for that, given that that's your tendency. Not everybody becomes euphoric, but those that do, it's a good feeling, but it's where you have an exaggerated view of yourself because you've done well. Maybe overestimate how good you are. Just as maybe you're not as bad as you think you are when you've not done well. Somewhere or other, there's a balance.
Okay, Scott of Houston says, do you feel some of the biofeedback systems are helpful? One system monitors the temperature of your thumb. And thanks for doing this seminar.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I think it's biofeedback. There are any variety of techniques for biofeedback. The critical thing is that they all kind of the temperature in your thumb is a reflection of your physiology. And it's possible to get centered, to get relaxed, and to reduce that temperature or to raise that temperature or to influence your blood pressure or your pulse and so forth. Any one of these techniques is a good technique for getting you to get more centered and more relaxed. And again, let me mention that website, rekeeve.com, in case any of you have questions. Look it up and send me an email. Happy to, you know, respond to these kinds of questions. They're all very good.
Okay, another question from Malcolm. Certain mental states are associated with one or more types of brainwave frequencies, alpha, theta, etc. Would you be able to comment on what types of patterns would be associated with peak performance?
Generally, it's the alpha wave, which is sort of when people are very relaxed, very centered. That shows up in terms of alpha waves. And meditation, yoga, things like that enable people to get into that alpha state, where there's greater clarity, greater ability to see reality, much more confidence, and the ability to transcend stress and difficulties and hardships.
Okay, Ari. That looks like that concludes all the questions.
Thanks, Ari. I appreciate this.
We wanted to remind everybody that this presentation will still be on the site, so you can come back and listen to it again on replays. So thank you very much, Ari. I think everybody really appreciated your presentation. And also mention you have an upcoming book. You might talk about that just for a couple minutes.
Sure. I have a book coming out at the end of February called Hedge Fund Leadership, in which I talk about leadership in hedge funds. And I went around and talked to the heads of a number of different hedge funds about the ways in which they organize their firms, how they the different ways in which they approached it, how they organized it in terms of analysts and portfolio managers and management, and how to empower people, how to deal with team building, how to get the most out of people that you're working with, how to get people to support you, which I think has relevance to all of us in our lives as well as in our trading lives or trading careers. I think there's probably a lot of interesting concepts and notions there about how to achieve an objective, how to sustain productivity, how to work with other people, how to build a network. I mean, to the extent that people listening are people who are not professional traders but are just trading, they should know that the people who are professionals spend a tremendous amount of time networking with colleagues and sharing ideas with other people, getting their ideas from other people, having an opportunity to vet their ideas by getting the bull and bear case from other people who have different points of view, and a tremendous tremendous amount of time and effort goes into discussions about investment. And so a person that's not in a firm would do well to network with other people that they know to build up that kind of support structure and opportunity, not so much to get tips, but to learn how other people dig deeper and share with them their own approaches to it. In any event, a lot of those issues are discussed in that book. It's coming out in end of February.
Okay,
and
thank you very much, Ari.
More, ret.com, and I really appreciate this opportunity.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
The moderator has...